This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in to WRFL Lexington. It's now 4:05, and you're listening to Green Talks, where we explore the people and projects that are promoting sustainability in the UK community. I'm your host, Lauren Thomas, and I'm the current director of outreach for the Student Sustainability Council. This week, I'm joined by Shane Tedder. He's the sustainability coordinator for the university, and he will be speaking on a few up-and-coming and current developments in the sustainability community. So do you just want to give us a general overview on the projects that you're sort of pumping out right now?
Sure. Good afternoon, Radio Land. Lauren, thanks for having me back on here and for fixing my mic so that people who are listening can hear me. Yeah, it's been an exciting semester from a kind of 30,000-foot view, planning and policy stuff. There's some really neat stuff happening. So I think that'd be a great topic to dive into. We've got a sustainability strategic plan that we've been working on since last fall. And we have a new greenhouse gas emissions reduction commitment that the president signed on December 15th. And both of those pieces will provide good maps for like the next 5 to 8 years. And also provides just some great opportunities to report back in meaningful ways about the cool stuff that's happening.
Awesome. So would you sort of dive into the greenhouse gas emissions reduction?
Sure. That effort came after many years of work, both by university committees, the President's Sustainability Advisory Committee in particular, and through student leadership that was very consistent over 4 or 5 years. In making their voice heard relative to their feeling that the University of Kentucky should take a leadership position on climate change by adopting an emissions reduction target. So it took a while getting there. I was really thrilled to get there this December. And what we ended up with was a commitment to reduce the emissions of the campus by 25% below 2010 levels. By 2025. And that's kind of a mouthful. So the commitment's to be a 25% reduction by 2025. Mm-hmm. And we chose 2010 as a baseline. There's nothing really magical about 2010. Well, in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, there may have been some magical things about 2010. My son turned one. That was pretty magical.
There you go. That's a big deal.
Digression. Sorry. It's been a long day. So in 2010, we estimate that the campus had greenhouse gas emissions of about 532,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent.
Whew.
That's another mouthful. So metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, or MTCO2E, or from this point on, emissions probably.
Mm-hmm.
There are various gases that have heat trapping properties when they get into the atmosphere, and they have different intensities. And so the folks who really work on climate change and emissions reductions came up with an equivalency to put everything in terms of carbon dioxide. So mm-hmm. methane, for example, like 1 ton of methane has the same impact of like 23 tons of carbon dioxide.
Okay.
And so 1 ton of methane would be 23 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent.
Right.
So that's how we measure it. So we had 532,000 tons of emissions in 2010, and we are targeting just under 400,000 tons of total campus emissions by the year 2025. And so that's 132,000 reduction. Mm-hmm. Which is 25% of that 2010 number. So that's the real basic math of it. There's mm-hmm. a lot that goes into tracking and calculating our emissions. And we've got a great task force of students, faculty, and staff who have been working since January, or really been working since the president signed this commitment, to develop the implementation plan for how we get there.
And how is that going to look? How is that reductions going to be possible?
You know, about 85% of the campus emissions come from the combination of the electricity we buy from Kentucky Utilities and the emissions that come from our production of steam to heat campus buildings. And so we also spend big money on those three things. I think between those three, we probably spend somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million a year buying electricity and buying coal and buying natural gas to power and heat the campus. And so one of the ways that we'll go about this is just by being really aggressive with optimizing our current systems and targeting building upgrades for efficiency. You know, I think our commitment to an emissions reduction is grounded in global climate science. Mm-hmm. And motivated by economics. So we're going to do it economically. I mean, we're not going to be throwing money at this. We're hopefully going to be saving money from it. You know, if 85% of our emissions come from major utility purchases, I think there's an opportunity to both reduce the operating costs of the university as we're targeting emissions.
Absolutely. So can you kind of give me a history of how we got to the commitment itself, when the process started, and where the idea even came from?
Yeah, so in 2006, 100 college and university presidents signed a document called the American College and University Presidents Climate Commitment. It was at the very first conference of ASHE, which is the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Ed. I was a graduate student in 2006 and had the opportunity to be in Tempe, Arizona for that. And so I got to see the ACUPCC, as we came to call it over the last decade, signed into existence.
Awesome.
And that was really a watershed moment for climate change in higher ed, or addressing climate change in higher ed. Because it provided some structure and it elevated the profile to the level of the university president, and really it has been the gold standard over the last decade in terms of, calling it the gold standard might be a little unfair. There are some schools that have done a tremendous job of addressing their emissions without becoming signatory to that commitment. So that happened in 2006. In 2009, the University of Kentucky formed the President's Sustainability Advisory Committee. Former President Lee Todd formed that committee and gave them a 9-point charge. And one of their charges was to develop a plan to reduce the emissions of the university and to become more climate neutral. So that was 2009. That committee has met continuously since then and has ticked off various aspects of the charge, and in 2012, when Dr. Capilouto came to campus as president, the leadership of PSAC met with him to reaffirm that 9-point charge, and he said yes. And so later, I guess it was in February that we had that meeting. And then in the summer, we met with him and said, okay, one of the points of our charge is this emissions reduction plan. We've talked about it. We think becoming signatory to the ACUPCC would be a good idea. Here's why. Here's what it would mean for us. And he had some very, very valid concerns about the kind of, you know, the devil's in the details. And so he, to his credit, you know, he looked at the details of the thing and really wanted to break our approach into two pieces. One, he wanted a really quantified, nuts and bolts, black and white. Can we get there? How much can we reduce our emissions? And what are the financial implications of it? So he said, do a report to figure that out. And then concurrently, figure out the right way to set up resources and incentives for our students and our faculty so that sustainability and climate change can be integrated in the curriculum in meaningful ways. With the national commitment, the ACUPCC, those two things are, you can't separate them. Mm-hmm. And he didn't feel like it was his place to sign into effect something that could be interpreted as dictating to the faculty what had to be taught. So I don't want to go that route. And I think it was a smart decision on his part. So we headed down that road. We created a report. And I should mention that, like, while all this is going on, that's kind of like on the official side of things mm-hmm. is going on. Students on campus, in particular UK Green Thumb, were very active in being student activists and being loud about the need for this. And mm-hmm. and not just being loud. Sometimes they were loud. Sometimes it was like 100-foot by 200-foot banner drops off of parking structures. And, and sometimes it was like laying down on the floor of the main building. And so there were, you know, there were some kind of classic activist measures taken. There were also a lot of structure to it. And so there were campaigns where signatures were gathered. And I think one year I got a ton of snowflakes that had been like made at an action. And each snowflake had like a reason why we should be addressing climate change. And
that's creative.
I had them like as a mural in my office for a while because I just thought it was cool.
Yeah.
So that was going on throughout. Mm-hmm. And I think really I would point back to like 2011 or 2012. A couple students came onto campus. A couple were leaving. Elaine Alvey and Patrick Johnson were leaving, and they had done some tremendous work in terms of just really intelligent organizing. And close on their heels were a couple of students, Caroline Engle, Ricky Gruel, and Tawny Qualls, who really took this up. And Caroline took it to really unparalleled heights. I mean, mm-hmm. she attended, she went to Lima, Peru for the preparatory conference for the Intergovernmental Conference on Climate Change in Paris last year, and mm-hmm. participated as a student leader from the United States, and you know, really involved at an international level in policymaking on the subject. So those folks were doing fantastic work concurrent to this other stuff going on. So, well, this is a long story, right?
I mean, it's
random,
apt.
You ask.
It's apt. It was a long process.
Yeah. So fast forward, we created a report. We had some administrative turnover. And then last spring, the students, you know, really pushed hard and requested again some movement. The administration said, look, we really aren't going to do this president's climate commitment. It's not the way we want to go. And so can we work on something that's unique to the campus that really fits the University of Kentucky? And so the students jumped on that window. The president's sustainability advisory committee got involved, and they worked together to co-author a commitment statement that they then sent to the PSAC for approval. And the PSAC, the President's Sustainability Advisory Committee, worst acronym of all time, maybe of all time, maybe not. There's probably worse ones, but
I'm apt to agree.
But it's bad. So that group sent it up to the president. He reviewed it, had some questions. There was a little bit of back and forth. And then in December, signed it into a commitment.
Very exciting.
Oh, it's so exciting. So it has two parts. It has the 25% reduction below 2010 levels by mm-hmm. 2025. And then it has this other part about integrating sustainability with the curriculum. And to do that, a faculty sustainability council was formed and given a charge by the provost. And so that group is working now on recommendations for how to better integrate, how to set up sustainability as a university priority that can be adopted and adapted into a variety of courses and disciplines in a way that makes sense to the instructors teaching those courses.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, just in your personal view, how do you see sustainability fitting in with the wider goals of the university?
It is really emerged as one of our guiding principles. Mm-hmm. We've got it listed as a core principle in our master plan. Mm-hmm. And our master plan really guides the physical development of the campus, how we build and operate our buildings. It was integrated into our utilities master plan. It's a key component of our transportation master plan. It's a key component of our campus landscape guidelines. And I think through the work of the Faculty Sustainability Council, we'll see the profile of sustainability as a learning outcome elevated. And, you know, we've got a great set of academic disciplines and programs that really key in on sustainability. And then we have entire schools that do a fantastic job of it. And so, but I think through the work of the FSC, we may see a much broader representation. There's kind of your usual suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a lot of unusual suspects on the Faculty Sustainability Council who are excited about the possibility. So I see it fitting in at a much more elevated profile than at any other point in my time here. And I've been here on and off since 1999. Mm-hmm. I've been here nonstop since 2002. So, you know, I think it's as well positioned right now as it has been. And, you know, the level of student involvement around sustainability is also really exciting. So you have the work of the Student Sustainability Council, which provides incredible funding opportunities for everybody who's interested. But then you just have this, you know, you help me maintain the website. So you see this great list of student organizations who focus on different aspects of sustainability.
And so, absolutely, yeah.
And to me, that's really where the student opportunity is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I go a little bit crazy because sustainability is so broad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to know a little bit about so many different things. And that's, like, there are going to be a few jobs like mine where you're a generalist.
Mm-hmm.
And you just are your connective tissue. But I think the real opportunity is in understanding and being able to frame the key problems of your profession through the framework of sustainability, through a triple bottom line that values people, prosperity, and the planet,
mm-hmm.
And future generations. You know, so I think that's where opportunity for students is. And so it's great that the student organizations, the way those have developed, are around interest areas that are framed in sustainability, whether that's waste reduction or hunger relief or energy or engineering without borders or gardening or, you know, it just, the
so
list
many,
goes on
yeah.
and on. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
So another long answer. The
totally
guys over at Wildcat Wheels gave me an L8 on my way over here. And so that might be part of the problem. I'm jacked
over-caffeinated.
Up on Kentucky soda here.
Well, on that note, we are actually going to take a quick break, but we will be right back with more talk of the very exciting greenhouse gas emissions reduction commitment. Welcome back. It's now 4:23, and you are listening to WRFL Lexington. I'm Lauren Thomas, the host and the current director of outreach for the Student Sustainability Council. I'm joined by Shane Tedder, the sustainability coordinator for the university. He's speaking on a few really awesome developments in the sustainability policy here at the university. So we focus a lot on the emissions reduction commitment, and I'd like to sort of redirect to the way that this is actually happening, which is the sustainability strategic plan. Could you touch on a little bit about what that process is going?
I'd love to. But first, I got to give a shout out to Paxton and Isabel out there in Radio Land. I just heard that they might be listening to the radio. And so, hey guys, thanks for tuning in. And
you're
I love
adorable
you.
Kids.
So yeah, what was the question? Sorry.
Just refocusing a little bit on the sustainability strategic plan and how is that going and what's that going to look like?
That's going great. And that is going to provide a roadmap for what we do over the next 5 years in some of our critical operational areas. So we got together a team and said, what's really relevant right now? As we mentioned earlier in the segment, sustainability is really broad, so you could go a lot of different ways with it. And so we looked at the full breadth and then said, you know, this plan needs to be manageable, and we've got to stay within our capacities. But we also know that there's certain things that are really relevant on the campus right now, given the transformation that we're seeing physically. So we ultimately decided on 5 strategic areas of campus operations to develop very focused strategic targets and improvements and performance metrics. So we're going to look at transportation, which is a huge issue right now, and we're moving in, I think, a really good direction relative to mobility issues on campus,
mm-hmm.
Thanks to the leadership of transportation services. Energy, which is a huge one. It's sometimes the 800-pound gorilla.
Right.
We also are going to look at buildings and grounds. We're going to look at food and dining services. We got some neat stuff happening kind of in all aspects of what we do relative to food. So in the food we serve on campus, and the way we research food, and the way we do community outreach on food, and the way we teach about food.
Mm-hmm.
So in all the really the critical core activities of the university, food is one where right now is a great time to have that included. And then the final category is materials management, which... What is materials
what
management?
Does
what does that mean? So materials management is us kind of blending together the purchasing of stuff with the ultimate disposal of it. So we
gotcha.
Buy a lot of stuff, and at the end of the day, a lot of stuff gets thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And the policies that we have for what we buy impacts what's in the waste stream at the end of the day. So it's kind of a full life cycle analysis of what are we buying? How are we buying it? Who are we buying it from? And then how are we using it? What's its end life like? So in each of those five areas, or for each of those five areas, we assigned what we called a tactic team with a lead who was an expert on campus, and had those team leads develop their own teams. So we had five different tactic teams that were tasked with developing tactics for each of those five strategy areas. And they did that, and then we threw that out in February in a campus survey to just see, you know, are we on target with this, and are what we thinking about things that are important to the campus? And we had about 400 people respond, I think we had more than that respond. We'll say it was several hundred. It was between mm-hmm. four or seven, and I forgot that part of my notes, so.
That's all right.
And got a lot of great feedback. So what we did was the strategy groups prioritized their tactics, and mm-hmm. then we got the campus feedback to see where the campus priorities were. And we kind of blended those two things and have now come up with the list of about 25 different tactics that we're going to implement over the next 5 years. We'll have a draft of the plan, hopefully up for review in April, by the end of the month. And we're going to leave that as a draft plan until probably late August or early September,
mm-hmm.
and have mechanisms for campus feedback. And then early next fall, finalize it, make it an interactive website, and then annually report on our progress relative to those things.
Awesome. So how do you sort of see both of these initiatives fitting together? They obviously have a lot of overlap between the reduction commitment and the sustainability strategic plan, but what's their relationship?
No, they're really tightly integrated, even in a planning standpoint. I mentioned the five key areas.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually six strategic areas in the plan, and greenhouse gas emissions reduction is the sixth.
Gotcha.
But it, in a lot of ways, is the aggregate of the strategic actions we're taking in transportation and energy and in buildings and grounds. And so we've approached it that way. There's a task force that's that I mentioned earlier in the show that's set up to develop an implementation plan for how we get to that 25% reduction.
Mm-hmm.
That task force has now gone through the list of all the tactics that those teams have proposed and said, well, these four we're definitely going to include as mitigation strategies for the emissions reduction plan. What else is missing, and try and fill in the holes. So the greenhouse gas emissions reduction commitment and the implementation plan will be feathered into the sustainability strategic plan. So if you picked up that one plan, it would be in there. And they're obviously related.
Mm-hmm.
There are some differences mm-hmm. that we could get into just with kind of how we make the final push to get to 25%. But I'll let you make that call, because I think we may be running short on time.
We are a little bit, but I was just going to give you an opportunity to sort of wrap up any thoughts or initiatives that you want to get out there really quick.
Oh, man. You know, it's an exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Absolutely.
The level of student interest in the Student Sustainability Council was unprecedented.
Yeah.
This spring, we had, I think, what do we have, 25 at-large applicants?
Mm-hmm. Eight groups
eight
applying.
Eight new groups to applying to join. And so the level of interest actually sparking a change in the Constitution to increase the size of that organization is fantastic. We've got the student internship program that you're eligible to apply until, I think, Tuesday of next week, the 18th. And so far, I think we've got 45 applications for five positions. We've got these policies that are really rolling. And so I guess I'm just excited about how it's taking off, how sustainability as a kind of an organizing principle for how we operate mm-hmm. as a campus, and also as a key learning outcome for educating future leaders is really a seed that was planted a long time ago that's really starting to sprout in some exciting ways. So I would just encourage you, if you're a student on campus, to look for opportunities to engage. I think it will differentiate you as you make the next steps in your career, whether that's graduate school or a job. I think if you can frame whatever the key challenges are of the field you're interested in terms of sustainability, it's going to differentiate you as an applicant. And then, for faculty, there are tons of ways to integrate sustainability using a campus as a living lab, and I'd love to help with that. And so I guess those are some final thoughts. It's Bike Week. There was a great Bike to Campus event today, and there's a tour of Lexington's murals tomorrow. So if you go to uky.edu/transportation,
mm-hmm.
It should be a pretty easy path to get to all of the events for Bike Week. I think it's also Social Justice Week.
Yeah.
College of Social Work is putting on. It's some other week, too.
April's packed.
April is packed. And then it's, April is our traditional outreach month. And mm-hmm. so it's Earth Days in the Bluegrass this month. And so
right.
we've got events almost every day mm-hmm. up on our calendar on the sustainability website. So tons going on in a such a diverse range of topics that there's got to be something for everybody there. And I could probably sign out on that. Pax and Isabel, if you're still listening, over and out. This is Dad on the radio.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited about all of these projects, and I hope that all the listeners are too. So just for some closing announcements, like we just mentioned, the Earth Days in the Bluegrass is in full swing. You can find a complete calendar of sustainable events around campus and Lexington at uky.edu/sustainability/EDBG. And as always, any member of the University of Kentucky community can submit a proposal to the Student Sustainability Council to receive funding support from the Environmental Stewardship Fee. All SSC meetings are open to the public and are announced on our website. We're actually having one tonight that's going to be at 6 p.m. in Patterson Hall, and you can find more information on our website. You can also like the SSC on Facebook or follow them on Twitter at UKYSSD. I will be around next week for another installment in Green Talks, and until then, thanks for listening and keep it locked.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.